I'm Barb Jordan. Welcome to another episode of Always Bev, The Ripple Effect. I know it's been a minute since my last episode. I've got a lot of big news that I want to share with you. But first, I want to talk about the student that was killed last week at the University of Georgia, Laken Riley. And I know that her tragic death has hit home with a lot of people and a lot of different communities. And when I think about Laken, I think about this. I think how many times she has jogged by herself as a career long distance runner. And then on this one day, the wrong guy is there. Most likely her intuition went off because when she was killed, she was trying to call 911. Unfortunately, on that one particular day, the wrong guy was in her environment and she was in an isolated area. And it's just a reminder, yes, even in America, even at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, if we choose to go to an isolated area, anything can happen because evil is anywhere. It can be anywhere. And we have to learn from these vicious crimes that happen to victims, because if we don't, I always say we're not honoring them. Their death will go unnoticed if we just go back to our routines and forget about these tragic crimes. I always say these victims that die tragically, they are screaming down to us from the heavens at times because they never would want the way that they were killed to happen to anybody else. So remember that. Remember when you make a decision to do something alone and you have the chance to take somebody with you, but it might take a few more seconds. You might not be able to go at the moment that you want to go. You're always going to be safer when somebody's with you. And speaking about victims, I think it's important to note, I always think that when someone is killed tragically, they have this one moment before the crime happens where their intuition is telling them that something's wrong. This next clip that I'm going to play, I've played it before in a previous episode, and I find it to be so powerful because there's so many lessons that are in it. I always say that violence rarely happens without a warning sign, and her warning sign came when the gate was left open. That was the warning sign. But as we get into this, I think it's so important to note that we're going to talk about a lot of different things in this story. But the first one is, what was the sign intuitively that she knew this was an individual she want nothing to do with? The other part of this story that I want you to listen to is how he tries to become one of us, how he tries to make this woman let her guard down. So he does it in a variety of ways, but one of the last ways he does it is by those two magic words, I promise. Anytime somebody says, I promise to you, and you don't know them, and you don't trust them, that is their way of making you let your guard down.
He had probably been watching her for a while. We aren't sure. But what we do know is that she was not his first victim. That afternoon, in an effort to get all her shopping done in one trip, Kelly had overestimated what she could comfortably carry home, justifying her decision as she struggled with the heavy bags. She reminded herself that making two trips would have meant walking around after dark, and she was too careful about her safety for that. As she climbed the few steps to the apartment building door, she saw that it had been left unlatched again. Her neighbors just don't get it, she thought. And though their lax security annoyed her, this time she was glad to be saved the trouble of getting out the key. She closed the door behind her, pushing it until she heard it latch. She is certain she locked it, which means he must have already been inside the corridor. Next came the four flights of stairs, which she wanted to do in one trip. Near the top of the third landing, one of the bags gave way, tearing open and dispensing cans of cat food. They rolled down the stairs, almost playfully, as if they were trying to get away from her. The can in the lead paused at the second floor landing, and Kelly watched as it literally turned the corner, gained some speed, and began its seemingly mindful hop down the next flight of steps and out of sight. "Got it. I'll bring it up," someone called out. Kelly didn't like that voice. Right from the start, something just sounded wrong to her. But then this friendly-looking young guy came bounding up the steps, collecting cans along the way. He said, "Let me give you a hand." No thanks. I've got it." "You don't look like you've got it. What floor are you going to?" She paused before answering him. "The fourth, but I'm okay, really." He wouldn't hear a word of it. And by this point, he had a collection of cans balanced between his chest and one arm. "I'm going to the fourth floor too," he said, "and I'm late. Not my fault, broken watch. So let's not just stand here. And give me that." He reached out and tugged on one of the heavier bags she was holding. She repeated, "No, really, thanks, but no, I've got it." Still holding onto the grocery bag, he said, There's such a thing as being too proud, you know." For a moment, Kelly didn't let go of the bag, but then she did. And this seemingly insignificant exchange between the cordial stranger and the recipient of his courtesy was the signal to him and to her that she was willing to trust him. As the bag passed from her control to his, so did she. "We better hurry," he said as he walked up the stairs ahead of Kelly. "We've got a hungry cat up there." Even though he seemed to want nothing more at that moment than to be helpful, she was apprehensive about him. And for no good reason, she thought. He was friendly and gentlemanly, and she felt guilty about her suspicion. She didn't want to be the kind of person who distrusts everybody. So they were next approaching the door to her apartment. "Did you know a cat can live for 3 weeks without eating?" he asked. "I'll tell you how I learned that tidbit. I once forgot that I'd promised to feed a cat while a friend of mine was out of town." Kelly was now standing at the door to her apartment, which she'd just opened. "I'll take it from here," she said, hoping he'd hand her the groceries, accept her thanks, and be on his way. Instead, he said, "Oh no, I didn't come this far to let you have another cat food spill." When she still hesitated to let him in her door, he laughed understandingly. "Hey, we can leave the door open like ladies do in old movies. I'll just put this stuff down and I'll go. I promise." She did let him in, but he did not keep his promise. At this point, as she's telling me the story of the rape and the whole 3-hour ordeal she suffered, Kelly pauses to weep quietly. She now knows that he killed one of his other victims, stabbed her to death. All the while, since soon after we sat down knee to knee in the small garden outside my office, Kelly has been holding both my hands. She is 27 years old. Before the rape, she was a counselor for disturbed children, but she hasn't been back to work in a long while. That friendly-looking young man had caused 3 hours of suffering in her apartment and at least 3 months of suffering in her memory. The confidence he scared off was still hiding, the dignity he pierced still healing. Kelly's about to learn that listening to one small survival signal saved her life, just as failing to follow so many others had put her at risk in the first place. She looks at me through moist but clear eyes and says she wants to understand every strategy he used. She wants me to tell her what her intuition saw that saved her life. But she will tell me. It was after he'd already held the gun to my head, after he raped me. It was after that. He got up from the bed, got dressed, then closed the window. He glanced at his watch and then started acting like he was in a hurry. "I gotta be somewhere. Hey, don't look so scared. I promise I'm not gonna hurt you." Kelly absolutely knew he was lying. She knew he planned to kill her, and though it may be hard to imagine, it was the first time since the incident began that she felt profound fear. He motioned to her with the gun and said, "Don't you move or do anything. I'm going to the kitchen to get something to drink and then I'll leave, I promise. But you stay right where you are." He had little reason to be concerned that Kelly might disobey his instructions because she had been, from the moment she let go of that bag until this moment, completely under his control. "You know I won't move," she assured him. But the instant he stepped from the room, Kelly stood up and walked after him, pulling the sheet off the bed with her. "I was literally right behind him, like a ghost, and he didn't know I was there. We walked down the hall together. At one point, he stopped and so did I. He was looking at my stereo, which was playing some music, and he reached out and made it louder. When he moved on toward the kitchen, I turned and walked through the living room." Kelly could hear drawers being opened as she walked out her front door, leaving it ajar. She walked directly into the apartment across the hall, which she somehow knew would be unlocked. Holding a finger up to signal her surprised neighbors to be quiet, she locked their door behind her. "I knew if I had stayed in my room, he was going to come back from the kitchen and kill me. But I don't know how I was so certain."
We all are given the gift of intuition, and if we would listen to it more, we could stay safe. The very first instant where she knew her intuition was speaking to her was when she said, "I didn't like his voice." That was the signal from intuition. All right, the useless information. He's trying to stay with her. He's trying to help her. He's just spewing random things out of his mouth. He talks about a broken watch. Nothing to do with the situation. A lot of times these guys will just spew out information. They're big talkers. It might be somebody working on your home. It might be somebody you meet at a social event. They're just giving you a lot of information, and it doesn't really pertain to what you're talking about. I always say that predators try to blend in. They try to blend in to put us at ease. And what he does with her here is he says the phrase, "We have a cat to feed." And what she had to recognize was, "We don't have a cat to feed. It's my cat, and I'm going to take it from here." But again, every decision we make can determine our safety. Her intuition inside the home was excellent. She saw some things and she knew this is a bad situation. Why else would he turn the stereo up? Why else would he shut the window after he raped her? Because she knew intuitively he was going to do something violent, and both of those things would limit the sound. All right, I want to end this with that you all know that I travel the country teaching my personal safety class to women, college women, young girls. And now, in honor of International Women's Day on March 8th, I am launching this class online. It has over 20 tactics and skills that you can implement into your life right away for at home, socially, everyday situations. But I promise you, if you take this course, you will be empowered. And if you're not going to do it for yourself, then do it for your mom, your sister, your daughters, your cousins, your aunts, your girlfriends, your partners. It is time for the women in America to get empowered and to be smart and to stay smart and to not be fooled. Get this course. Get empowered. You have to take care of yourself in order to take care of others. You can find it on my website at alwaysbev.com. I'm your host, Barb Jordan. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Always Bev, The Ripple Effect.